Hello, welcome to another episode of One for the Table. I'm your host with the mostest, Kim Chi.
And I'm John Kung. Hi, everybody.
Hello. All right, so a lot has happened. We actually have a lot of listener questions this week, which we'll get to.
Oh, amazing.
But first, we'll let John have it. All right.
Wait, what do you mean you will let me have? Will let me have what?
There's an update to the Chili Crunch saga.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So
I sent the article to John, and the next thing you know, all of his social media I see is spammed. He's talking about this Chili Crunch, and I'm like, wow. He's really spent this entire day thinking about this article.
I have not. The thing is, the crazy thing is, like, I had already filmed a video. I filmed a video yesterday about me making a Chili Crunch recipe, and I was planning on making it kind of like a, not a protest video, but a like, if you're going to trademark this, I'm going to make this as generic as possible. So like when the office comes out and like sees that there's content about this stuff as a generic condiment, it would make it harder for you to like, it would make it harder for anyone to like claim Chili Crunch as a patent.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that like I feel this powerful. I just feel like if I put stuff out there, more people will as well. So making the case for it. But then Kim sent me this email saying that David Chang on his podcast is not going to seek kind of like protecting their trademark of chili, or technically their thing is Chile Crunch. They do not own the trademark for Chili Crunch. They filed for that shortly, not long ago. So you know, it changed the voiceover, but it didn't change the video itself that I had come out with. And now he says, he correctly says, now that nobody is seeking to protect this trademark, it leaves it open for other companies to kind of swoop in and grab it and try to take it and claim it for themselves. It's going to be very, very difficult because of all of this has happened, all of this press and stuff like that. But, you know, it could be possible if you're a company with like billions of dollars to like throw away at this thing. I guess it might be worth, I don't think it would be worth any company to pursue, but they said that it is open now to being claimed by something else. So like, I put my video out there because I wanted to. It's it's called, in trademark lingo, I think it's called genericide, where the brand name or the trademark becomes so connected with the actual thing itself that it loses its meaning. Like Band-Aid. What else do you call it? But the thing is, that used to be a trademark. And so many people started calling it Band-Aid or Kleenex that like they actually don't have the protections anymore because that's all people know it as. So what we're trying to do that with Chili Crunch, basically.
Not exactly like on the same situation, but trademark, I think, is such a funny thing.
Oh my God,
like what
yeah,
happened
it is.
With like Sierra Mist?
Wait, what? What happened with Sierra Mist?
So I guess they didn't like renew their trademark or something.
Uh-huh.
So then this girl, I think her like name is like Sierra.
Mm-hmm.
She like bought the trademark.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think she like refused to like sell it to them. Or I think she was probably like holding out for more money or something.
Yeah.
So then they like rebranded to Sterry.
Sterry?
Yeah. So Sierra Mist is no more.
Yeah. Sierra Mist rebrand. Starry.
Starry, sorry. Sterry, Starry, whatever.
That's so funny. When did this happen?
It was back in like 2015.
Oh my God. But the thing is though, I had never heard of Starry.
Yeah. So obviously it wasn't a good
rebrand. Like,
but also like when everybody wants like, you know, like that like lime cider, I think everyone goes for like 7-Up or Sprite. Like
yeah,
Sierra
for sure.
was like the last resort for like, a lot of people, you know?
Which is funny too, because like Pepsi owns 7-Up. So like why even try? Like I guess they don't want just one lemon lime soda.
Yeah.
But like, oh, remember when we were at that Korean restaurant? We had that Sprite, and that Sprite was like,
it was so lime. Spicy.
It was like lime and battery acid, but it was so good at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know what was like wrong with that like can of Sprite, but the moment we drank it, like our tongues were like on fire.
It hurt. We were eating really, really spicy food. Yeah. We were eating spicy food, but like, yeah. The spiciest thing we had at that table was that the radioactive Sprite.
Because Korean people like love to eat like Sprite like in the middle of like their heavy meal. If they're eating like grilled pork belly or something, and then they'll eat Sprite because, you know, it takes like the fat off your tongue and like the fresh of your palate. Yeah, but I don't know why that day. It was like painful to drink that Sprite.
It like took the first three layers of our tongue off.
And we're like, whoa! So anyways, going back to the original topic. So I guess with that said, had you only released this Chili Crunch video maybe 2 days ago?
Oh, then it would have been worse though. If I released it 2 days ago, then it would have been dated already because they would have like done the right thing. And then I would have been like talking about them doing the wrong. That's the danger with like short form media like this is like things can quickly change. And so because of current events, I think my video now is a little bit more time will like stay a little bit more timely. But yeah, it would. I would have been pretty upset. Not upset that they eventually did the right thing, but upset like, oh, I did all this work and that the voiceover is dated now.
And as someone who's tasted John's chili oil, John's chili oil is very, very good.
Oh, thank you.
So I can't wait to see this recipe video when it comes out.
It's already out.
Oh, well, I can't wait to go see it after this. And that's like the beauty of like food content is you look at all these recipes and you feel like you can make it on your own, but you're not going to. But you feel
This one's hard.
Yeah, exactly.
No, one was like hard. This one took me all like chili crunch is hard to chili oil is not that bad. Chili oil is like getting the components together, frying this thing. And then putting it into like a thing of chili flakes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you can finesse it. You can make it a little more complex and stuff in different ways. But ultimately, it's pretty easy to do. Chili crunch, to do chili crunch well, like you need two separate things of oil. You need one oil to fry peanuts and soybeans. But then you can't use that oil to make the chili crisp itself because then it's like kind of like it's frying oil. You save it to use for like fried chicken or fish or whatever instead. And then after frying those, you fry in the good oil, you fry garlic and shallots so that the oil gets nice and fragrant. And then you have crispy garlic and crispy shallots to put in there too.
Mm-hmm.
And one trick is after you fry, well, one trick I learned at restaurants is after you fry garlic and after you fry shallots, put it in the oven just for a little while to like get it like super dry and crispy. You could dust it with a little bit of like, you know, put salt or like a little bit of cornstarch on it before you put it in the fryer if you wanted to, but you don't have to.
And it'll hydrate itself in the oil anyway, right?
So yeah.
So get it extra crispy.
Right. And so after that, you take that garlicky, shallot-y oil and then you put like spices in there. You cook spices in there and then you take those spices out and then you pour it into like chili flake with all like the Szechuan peppercorns and the sesame seeds and stuff. And then you add back in the peanuts, the soybeans and the garlic and the shallots. And it's like super, super thick and crunchy. It's as it should be. I think the company that has it down packed really well is, at least their texture-wise, is the Flyby Jing Chengdu Crunch. I think I've mentioned it on this podcast before, and they don't sponsor us or anything. I just think that they have like the crunchiest, crispiest, crunchity chili crunch out there right now.
Can I say something brave yet controversial?
What?
So with all of this being said, I don't love chili crunch oil.
Oh, really?
So I love chili oil.
Yeah.
I love the flavor of chili oil.
Yeah.
But I don't love chili crunch.
Really?
Yes. And my opinion on this is like so personal and like irrelevant to like all the conversation.
But people are totally like, you could say you don't like something. That's totally fine. But like, how are you using it though?
I mean, I can, you know, like drizzle on like congee or like, you know, eggs or whatever. Uh-huh. But then most of the time, I just want the flavor from the oil.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes like the crunchy texture
gets in the way of
In the way of just like me enjoying this flavor. Like, and I think that's one of the reasons why Lao Gamma is one of my favorite chili crunch oil, because then their chili.
It's soft.
It's soft. It's not crunchy.
It's a paste.
Yeah.
Almost. Because
sometimes, like, I'll be eating this thing where I'm enjoying, like, this, like, mellow, like, smooth, silky texture. But then the chili crunch is kind of like just, like, random hard, crunchy stones, like, in this, like, smooth sea of silk.
See, I think chili crunch itself is best when it's paired off with things like noodles, like as its own sauce. Like a lot of times we will use it, and a lot of times in China, like you have like the Chengdu noodles and the Shanxi noodles. It's like they have chili crunch that's in a little bag to put on top of your cooked noodles, and you just use that as if it were a sauce. It's a, you kind of like omsom the situation where you like put it in. It's really good as a thing in noodles because it's also like adds more.
Yeah, I feel like if there's something already had like a bite to it, I think it's great with it.
Yeah.
But I don't love it on softer things, I guess. I do love chili crunch on a cucumber salad.
Ooh, yeah. That sounds a really good idea.
Because I always buy those like little like bulk of like baby cucumbers all the time.
Yeah.
And I just like chop them up and then like lightly salt them, like drain the water. Mm. And then I toss it together with like vinegar, soy sauce, sesame oil, chili crunch. Like cilantro, green onion, just like really simple, and like chopped garlic.
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
And the chili crunch is good there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it's I like plain rice. On plain rice, like as like a, I call it like bachelor snack, where it's like I have rice in my cooker and I have no effort whatsoever. What can I do to this? I literally put a spoonful of chili crunch on it and that'll be it. But then like chili crisp and chili oil itself, like I use on a whole lot more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like chili oil, you put like on, you can drizzle on spring rolls or you can like put it on to things. But chili crunch is like its own ingredient in a way.
Oh, you know what actually chili crunch is actually good on?
What?
And it was a viral hack. And this is like actually legit good. On a vanilla ice cream.
Oh, I still have not tried that.
Why haven't you not tried that?
Because I don't have ice cream in my house.
Oh, that makes
sense. I need to get ice cream.
Gay people problems.
It's not that.
Dairy
it's that it's,
ice cream? Uh-uh. Not it in is my
still,
house.
It is still, it's still cold. It's still cold here. We're not eating, we're not in ice cream eating weather yet.
I know, I don't know. I feel like true ice cream connoisseurs doesn't care if it's cold or hot. Like, no one just eats ice cream on a hot day because it's hot. They eat ice cream because they love ice cream.
I do. I don't think. I don't do that. I don't know. I can't enjoy ice cream when I'm cold.
Well, you're also, like, one of those fitness gay. Like, of course ice cream is, like, not, like, in your priority list.
I just eat seasonally, Kim.
Ice cream? I don't think ice cream is a seasonal food, though.
Like, do you drink hot chocolate in the summer? I don't. But I love also, hot
like,
chocolate.
I don't really drink hot chocolate at all.
Oh, see, the thing is, I think like hot chocolate is my ice cream when it's cold.
Mm.
Like I have also, so many hot cocoa mixes.
But you
in the
love
winter.
Hot everything. Even like I on do. A hot day, like you'll drink hot coffee. You're always drinking hot tea. And I'm the opposite. I'm always drinking iced tea. I'm always drinking iced coffee.
Yeah.
Even just like water.
Yeah.
You love room temperature water or you love warm water.
The only time I don't is when I drink it like fizzy. Because fizzy water is better when it's cold.
See, I'm always like drinking cold water, even like filling up a tumbler, like with that ice. Like, I love having like ice water. So I think it's just a matter of like, are you a water sign? You're
me?
Yeah.
I'm an Aries.
What is that?
I think it's a fire.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fire sign. I don't know why I'm getting into like astrology.
Like, where did this come from?
I don't know. It's like, is it because I'm a fire sign? I need like cold things to cool
me
down.
You need to cool it down. Or it's like, or maybe is it because like I'm a fire sign? I just need to be hot. Like it's you can make an argument for either thing.
And anything, yeah.
Which is why the astrology is, yeah.
Well, welcome to me, who's like not fluent in astrology at all. Just making assumptions based on astrology.
Me neither, but like I will always, I will too though. Like it's definitely permeated into my, mm-hmm. I don't believe in astrology, but then like if somebody tells me something that is like, oh yeah, you would, you fucking Leo.
You know, anything that's wrong in my life is because I'm a Leo. Yeah. And any success that I have in my life is because I'm a Leo.
Exactly, right?
Or if there's like an inside of me that's like unexpected, then that's my moon sign talking.
Well, what's your does Korean have a zodiac? Do you have like a Chinese zodiac?
Yeah. We don't call it Chinese zodiac.
Well, obviously not. That's why I said Korean first. But do you have a version of the Chinese zodiac?
No, it's the same. We believe in and it's not that we believe in, but yeah, we have the zodiac just like. Oh, the Chinese folk.
Do you have the same animals? Or are you like the Vietnamese?
It's the same animals. Yeah, I'm your okay. rabbit.
Which one is the one that they? Wait, did they? Is it the Vietnamese where they replaced the rabbit with the cat?
Oh, did they replaced the rabbit?
I think one of them, and I think like that's such a serve. Like Year of the Cat, bitch. That is.
Wait, let me look this up.
That's so. I love that so much, though. Yes, it's cat.
Oh my god.
And they replaced it with rabbit. So in Vietnam you were born in the Year of the Cat.
Oh my god.
That's I love it.
Justice for rabbits. And obviously like Japan believes in zodiac too, I'm assuming, because only because I'm speaking because like the anime Fruits Basket.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They have a whole bunch of animes that are based off of, like, the Zodiac, though.
Yeah.
Like the Zodiac fighters and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Zodiac Warriors, whatever.
Yeah. I thought that was an old one. I used to read, like, what?
The Zodiac Warriors?
Yeah.
On Toonami?
No, not even that. I used to read, like, I didn't even read them because they were only in Japanese. But when I was in Hong Kong as a kid, mm-hmm. I would buy the mangas off of like the street stalls of like the Zodiac Warrior ones.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand a single thing because I couldn't read Japanese, but I would still like look at the pretty pictures and look at these like animal guy things, mm-hmm. like use magic powers. And it was cool.
In Korea, when I was like growing up in public TV, all broadcast stations would air cartoons from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. So after like elementary school, all the kids would be like hanging out and playing together. But then we'd make sure to go home by 6 o'clock to eat dinner and to watch the cartoons that's shown.
Would you flip the channels to see the different ones? Like,
so they like play like the same series like every day. Until like the series, and then they move to something else, and it's usually like two cartoons back to back. And different stations were playing like different things. So like one station would play Sailor Moon, and then
yes.
like, another station would play like Gundam or something.
And you so would try to do that thing where during the commercials you tried to watch the other one.
No, in Korea there's no commercial in between the shows.
Oh, really?
So the commercial is only at beginning and at the end. But while you're watching the show's never interrupted by commercials.
Wow, that's wild and kind of cool. And so, short.
Yeah, so then like when I moved back to America, it was like a shock to try to watch like movie.
Yeah.
Because the movie will cut like every like 10 to like 5 minutes. And I was like, it is so hard to watch a freaking movie on TV. Like, what is this?
In Hong Kong, they would play the commercials in the middle of the show as well. So I was just used to that.
No, so when in a cartoon, when you want to watch something, you'd have to like commit to it and watch it. Because if you flip back and forth, like you'd miss everything.
Oh, damn.
But
that's
I always like watch like
bad,
the early ones, like Sailor Moon and Wedding Peach, Saint Tail. Anyways, a lot of great animes. Have you ever seen the anime Saint Tail?
No.
So it's about a girl who's a thief.
Mm-hmm.
But she's in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
But what she chooses to steal is these people, they go to the church and then they tell like the nun, who's also an elementary school student, by day, like all their problems, like, oh, this person like stole like my family heirloom from me. So then she'll go and like steal the items back from the person and then like give it back to the original person.
Oh, it's like
but then
a good
there's, like
thief.
A romance story like between another kid in their class who was also a detective. These are all elementary school kids. I don't know. It was great. I watched that one religiously.
Do you know the anime called, I think it's pretty popular right now, Delicious in Dungeon?
I tried watching it. I hated it.
Really?
Yes.
People are telling me to watch and say, would say, and are saying
they say
that I'd like
you're
it.
A chef, and then that's one of the only few animes they see with food.
Okay.
Objectively, it's not that good of an anime.
Yeah.
And in my opinion. And then all the food they cook is like, I don't know, you know, they capture these like monsters and then they're mm-hmm. like, oh, with this like fish, we can like take the intestines out and like boil it. But then like the dish they make is like not really any like.
It has to, okay. I think like for like things like in food to work, mm-hmm. you need it to be rooted in reality.
Yeah.
In some way. Like it has to be like if like Food Wars, yes, they were super ridiculous and crazy about it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you're like.
They're making relatable food.
They're making relatable food. And they're making food that is at least somewhat possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like the things that they talk about, the ways that they get there, the ingredients that they use. Like, yes, those are all actually real. But they just do it in a way that is insanely like spectacular. Same with God, what's the other one? Even yeah, Restaurant in Another Dimension or something like that. They did
that
food.
One is cool. It's like a yeah. It's like a slow burn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like food was a part of it. And they did use food and it was animated really well, but then like mm-hmm. that was connected in a way where it was like how it was important to them and what they really loved and stuff like that. Like it was a different way to present it, but it was still like kind of rooted in something that was believable.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll give Delicious in Dungeon like a watch or two.
Watch like the first two episodes. I mean, it's not, the episodes aren't that long, so it won't yeah. take long. And if you like it, yeah, the rest of the show is just like that. Okay. I don't love it personally, but maybe I'm just being a hater. For food anime, have you ever seen Yakitate?
Yakitate.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it correctly, or but at least...
Yakitate. No. 2001 to 2007.
Yeah. It's about a kid who has like a hand of God. The uh-huh. hand is like really warm, which I guess
oh,
it's like ideal for making bread.
Oh, yes, I actually have seen this. And then like he would like need bread or something like that. And
his goal in life is to like make like the best bread in Japan.
Yes, yes.
So then he like goes to like the best bakery in like Japan to like become like their baker. But all these like crazy things happen. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched a few episodes of that, but that mm-hmm. was at the same time I was watching a bunch at the same time and just some other animes went out.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like the story of your life.
Pretty much.
Thought about it, but didn't get to it. Oh, well. I don't consume media. I'm John Kong.
What are you talking about?
All right. So, shall we get to the listener questions?
Oh, yeah. Also, actually... I have a thing to ask. So
I don't want to move to Detroit.
No, and I wasn't going to ask you that. But I'm actually going to California tomorrow.
Oh, really? And you weren't going to tell me? You're holding out on this information from me?
I only just found this out. But the problem is I'm flying in tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then I'm staying until Monday night and I'm flying back out.
Oh my God, you're yeah. here for one day?
I'm here for literally like 32 hours. And it's not even like, I didn't tell you right away because it's in Orange County.
Oh, okay, I'll see you later.
Yeah. But like, since we're on the air and talking about it anyways, like, do you know, I think I have one dinner. I have like one dinner to myself when I'm there Sunday mm-hmm. night. So mm-hmm. like, where should I go in Orange County?
Oh. I mean, OC has like a lot of great food, but I feel like mm-hmm. what OC is like really, really, really like pops off is Vietnamese mm-hmm. food.
Work. Okay.
And there's a lot of great options over there. When was the last time you've had like Vietnamese food?
It's been a long time. I mean, like, does the place that we went to count?
Where did it go?
Oh, wait. No, that was Thai food. It wasn't even really Thai food. It wasn't even really Thai food, though. Mm-hmm. No, the last time I had Vietnamese was actually with you. It was like we had pho in Chicago.
Well, After we get off the podcast, we'll discuss.
Okay.
I'll send you some options and we can discuss where those options are based on where you'll be staying.
Okay. Okay.
So, but yeah.
Do we want to take a break before moving to the questions?
No.
Okay, we're just going to go all the way.
Yeah, I just can't believe that you're only going to come here for like one day and then peace out.
It's like, yeah, it's for work, unfortunately.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's like we're not friends at all. You know?
I'm sure telling you now. I'm sure I only just accepted the gig like 2 days ago.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a lot of things to do in Detroit that you need to get back to. That you couldn't stay in California and even an extra day for.
I do. You know, yeah, the house sure, to I'm manage.
Sure. Yeah.
I have.
Yeah, you got some naps to take with
all this land.
Bed. Yeah. I'm sure you have some YouTube videos to make or something.
The thing is, like, if it was in LA, obviously I would have stayed for longer, but I was just like, how the hell am I going to get to LA from. I also didn't realize that Orange County was so far away.
It's not that far.
They said like an hour and a half drive.
And during traffic, traffic, maybe like 35 minutes.
Oh, I would have totally stayed longer if I'd known that. They made it sound like, from LAX, if you take LAX to where we're going, it's going to take at least an hour and a half. I'm just like, I don't know.
Where in Orange County are you?
I don't even know. Hold on. Let me check.
That's okay. I understand. You're a very busy person. You know, it's not easy being a superstar.
You're not gonna guilt me, and
I'm not guilting you. I'm just
Santa Ana.
Oh, Santa's not that far.
Oh. Well,
but it's okay.
I don't know the difference either way.
Oh, you're near Disneyland.
Oh, like Anaheim?
Like near? Yeah, it's like right next to Anaheim.
Oh, see, if I'd known that, I would have. Because
Santa Ana's like right underneath Anaheim.
Oh, they made it sound like it was so far away. They made it sound like it was so, so far that like I was have to fly to LA.
You see me enough. I see you enough. Yeah. You know, I'm busy this week. I don't have time for you.
Well, now that we know what's a good Vietnamese restaurant in Santa Ana?
Don't worry about it.
What? You're not going to tell me?
No. I hope you find a random place and I hope it's shitty.
That's so hateful.
All right, let's take a quick break, real quick.
Okay.
All right, we have some listener questions this week.
Yay.
The first one was emailed to us. Would you like to read it to us, John?
This one was sent to our email, which I totally remembered that we have. What is our email address? Let me just look that up right now.
You know, I forgot that we had an email address, which is why I never like promoted.
So it's onefortheTable@gmail.com with the number one at the front. So that's our email. You can send us an email question if you want. But yeah, this one says, "Hi, Kim and John. Love the podcast from the start. Especially enjoy how unapologetically Korean it is in some ways. And I also appreciate John's unapologetic choice to be in Michigan." My question is about I think these questions are probably directed to you. My question is about Chun. I know lots of the mixes for these Korean pancakes are pre-made and most Korean restaurants use them, but do you have any tips on good proportions when making them from scratch? I try to rely less on wheat flour, but often overdo the sweet rice flour. I've come to an okay medium with a mix of sweet rice flour and chickpea flour, but wonder if you have any tips on proportions and a good substitute for flours.
You know, I've only made chun with flour. I've never, like, tried chickpea flour, sweet pea, rice flour.
Yeah.
Like, is the goal, like, to be, like, gluten-free or something? Or?
It might be.
Okay.
It might be, but, like, you could try, like, a mix of maybe, like, rice flour and buckwheat. Buckwheat could make for a very tasty one. Tapioca starch is a good one to use in there, too, because we have a lot of, like, tapioca-style, like, pancakes mm-hmm. and stuff.
At least what, like, the knowledge passed down from, like, the Korean achumas and grandmas to me is, so the chun batter
mm-hmm.
should be, like, runny,
mm-hmm.
but, like, not watery.
Oh, for the people who don't know, like, can you describe chun for us?
So chun is basically, like, Korean pancake. You know, when you go to, like, restaurant, you see, like, seafood pancake or, mm-hmm. like, kimchi pancake. All of that is called chun.
My favorite is the one that's made with, like, green onions.
Yeah, I made it for John once, and he kept calling it a fritter. And then I was like, this is a kimchi pancake. And then he just kept making a point to call it a fritter. And I was like, why do you keep calling this a fritter? Like, it's like you're trying to, like, prove a point. And then he's like, well, this is what fritter means. And then he Googled it, and it's like, oh, you're actually right. This is a pancake. And I was like, he just tried to subtly, like, correct me and meant, like, explain my own culture food to me. But it is a pancake, not a fritter. But okay, so when you see, like, at least from, like, a lot of the videos I've seen of, like, the professional, like, ajumas and how they cook their jeonnas, they actually lay all the ingredients out first. So they'll take, like, the whole stalks of, like, green onion and lay it on a pan, and then they'll pour the batter over the top. So the batter just lightly coats the ingredient, and it's, like, not heavy in the batter. But when it comes to things like kimchi, like pancake, then you want to, like, mix it into the thing, but it's also going to get watery.
That's only when it's, like, wet, too, the kimchi. Mm-hmm. That's because the kimchi is wet already, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Mm. So I think, if anything, I think, like, the water ratio is, like, more important than, like, what flour, like, mm-hmm. ratio you use and, like, how thin, like, the batter is.
Yeah.
You want to, like, lightly coat the ingredients. But you don't want this to be, like, a batter-heavy, like, pancake.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it seems like from the question, they wanted to try mm-hmm. to do it with less, like, I think things with that didn't have gluten in them, which is mm-hmm. hard. I'm trying to remember, like, the texture.
Oh, another tip was use, like, cold water.
Oh, yeah.
To make the batter.
Yeah.
Like, even ice cold water is even better because then it'll get the better, crispier. And make sure your pan is, like, preheated. I feel like these are all basic. But sometimes, like, it's easy to, like, look a fundamental.
Yeah.
And it makes a big difference, like, in your final product, you know?
Yeah. There is a second part of...
Oh, wait, another thing. A generous amount of oil.
Of course.
Even if you're trying to be healthy, a generous amount of oil is needed for chun.
See, that's why in my mind, like, I kept calling it a fritter. Because, like, when I see, like, when there's a lot of oil that's used, I just think of fritter because I think it's fried.
It's not a fritter, mister.
Okay.
I will fight you on this.
After you mentioned gim snacks in the latest episode. Oh, gim, the seaweed snacks. I also mm-hmm. wondered if you think that toasting gimbugak. Gimbugak works in lieu of frying. My body doesn't tolerate lots of fried food, but I'm addicted to crunch. So the one time I got prepared gimbugak from my aunt in Korea, I used a stovetop toaster in my gas range to finish it. Any other tips for adding to gim to make more crunchy snacks? I guess without using too much oil, they're asking.
Okay, so for those of you who doesn't know what gimbugak is basically like... seaweed with, like, rice paper attached to it, and then it's fried.
So oh, okay.
It holds its shape, but then also yeah. you get, like, that light, airy crisp from like the rice paper, but then you get like the crunchy flavor of the seaweed.
Yeah.
So roasting, I can't really say that I have too much experience making kimbukak because I don't really make fried food.
Yeah.
But also, it's one of those things like where if you fry it, it's like it pops off. And
yeah.
I feel like, is there a really way to like
make those things puff?
Yeah.
You can puff certain things in the microwave instead of with oil. It's not as good, but you can do
it. Oh, with rice paper though?
Yeah. I know you can do it with tapioca stuff. So like prawn crisps, mm-hmm. like shrimp chips and stuff like that. If you find the unfried version and put them in the microwave, they will puff up. Some rice paper ones, I've mm-hmm. some of them have worked. Some of them have not. It really depends on which ones. But
yeah.
a lot of the time, those things have oil in them already and like microwaving them makes them puff. So mm-hmm. you might be able to be lucky with that. I know like certain things, Mexican snacks like duros, they can be made in a microwave. These are all things that are better fried.
Yeah. But I guess so, if you're trying to find like
an oil-less house, free.
Oil-less free.
Like it has to be in the microwave. You can't do it in an air fryer. It's just not the same thing. It's not the same like mechanism that makes them puff.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it's like, you know, honestly, I think there are better
if
snacks.
You want like a low oil option, you might just have to forego like the rice paper part and just eat roasted seaweed.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I like, and I love that too. Like just the seaweed paper.
It's just like nice and light, you know?
Tzihoy, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a reason why fried food is so good, right?
Yeah.
And then we're always trying to find like the best like next substitute. Because, you know, obviously it's not healthy. But
really, it's just like, let yourself eat it and portion yourself and just like, you know, control it.
Or don't.
Or
live
don't.
Your life.
Yeah.
I guess maybe you can get those like oven-baked rice pups from like the grocery store and maybe like wrap roasted seaweed around it.
That could be
good. That might be a good way to get like the crunchy substitute, you know?
Yeah.
That's like not fried.
Or even like rice crackers or something. I don't know.
It's called bungtigi.
Bungtigi?
Which is like Korean like puffy rice cake, but it's like a round disc.
Oh, those things?
You can like cut I've that seen, into like little
like
pieces
dusted with a little
bit of seaweed and it'll be have the same texture.
I think they actually do sell that. I think they do sell. Are they like super like they're crunchy and smooth?
Yeah, and it's brown.
Yeah. I've seen like whatever the Japanese version is, I've seen those ones covered in seaweed.
Okay.
They're like a little bit sweet but very savory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like a touch of sweetness to it. Yeah.
They're so good. They're so good.
But
they're
the Korean
addictive.
Version has like no oil. Mm. While the Japanese version, I know you're talking about, it is slightly oily.
Yeah, it is.
But bungtigi.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of snacks, you hear your girls in the news too, Trader Joe's.
What happened to them?
I think like, I thought everybody knew this, but apparently not. So one of the ways that Trader Joe's like works is that they kind of like go to these snack companies and was like, hey, we want to work with you. Mm-hmm. And basically what a lot of the companies will do, they'll like literally hand over like the recipe and the processes and stuff like that. And then Trader Joe's will ghost them and make their own.
Oh.
And I was like, that's one of the reasons why I don't shop there. But I just thought nobody cared. As it turns out, not a lot of people knew this. Mm-hmm. And now they are on the news. Right up there with David Chang.
I mean, that's such a common tactic in America.
Yeah, you know? It is.
There's no ethical consumption anymore, like in America at this point. No. You know,
like so, like more recently, what I think a couple years ago, they did it to like an Indian woman-owned company with their like, you know, every single thing that is like Asian branded. In Trader Joe's has to have been stolen by a different company because they are not coming up with that shit by themselves. People at Trader Joe's corporate just got off of like the racism like complaints for their store and stuff. You think they're good enough to make achar?
Mm. But also like a lot of them, they work with these companies and these companies basically just like reproduce stuff with Trader Joe's labels, no?
Huh? No, that's... that's what a lot of people think they did. They just take the recipes.
That's not, because like their kimbap, for example, I know it's the same company that makes kimbap for Costco, but they're like,
oh yeah, a lot of them can be rebranded like Bibigo things if they're like too.
Yeah, so they work with Bibigo. It's not all of them.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, also Trader Joe's, they provide specific like things at like a very convenient price point for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we could talk about like the evil of Whole Foods.
Oh, that's the Amazon.
We could talk about the evil of like Walmart, you know. But, I mean, honestly, all these major corporations, chances are,
yeah,
they're fucking over someone.
Ooh. I just like, I was reading the Trader Joe's thing, but like more importantly, Jollibee is bringing back ube pie.
Oh, I didn't even know they had ube pies.
I don't know, but it looks so good. Made with real ube and is bringing in more chicken sandwich flavors. Ooh, we're going to go.
But have you heard about the ube shortage?
No.
Because when ube became like so popular, like in the Western culture, like all of a sudden, that like in Philippines, they're having like an ube shortage, keeping up like the ube production.
Really?
Yeah. You know, but also that's very America.
Yeah.
Something gets popular and then
we just do it to death.
Yeah. And then the original people who, you know, founded those things don't have access to it anymore.
Oh, that sucks.
Happened to a lot of things, you know. Salmon, quinoa.
What'd be salmon?
Huh?
What's salmon?
Overfishing salmon?
Oh yeah, we already knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, what's the next question?
Before we get spiral even further about how terrible the world is.
Yeah.
All right. Hi, Kim and John. Just wanted to provide an update. My partner and I hosted our K-pop cafe. Do you remember our listener?
Mm, oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that
like
question.
Hosting, like, K-pop-inspired get-together. Anyways, so this is from them. And it was a success. Kim, we took your recommendation for the Inkigayo sandwich, and it was a massive hit. Thank you for the suggestion. And they sent us a picture of, like, their K-pop cafe menu.
Aww.
And the drinks are Honey's House Coffee. Honey's, like, a member of, like, New Jeans, which is iced latte made of Vietnamese Robusta beans, milk, and condensed milk. That sounds amazing. I Purple You Latte. Iced latte sweetened with condensed milk and topped with ube sweet cream. Booze iced Americano, espresso topped with orange infused water and sweetened with honey. Zero's milk tea. Zero's is like the fandom name for Zero Base One, my favorite K-pop boy group. which is Rosa some black milk tea. Why aren't we friends? Why wasn't I invited to this K-pop cafe?
Where are they based? They have to be from LA. Or maybe SF.
I hope they're from LA. But I hope they're not, because I might be mad that I wasn't invited.
Watch. No, this sounds like we can guess. Like, I think this sounds like a SF group.
Well, let me click on their profile.
Dun, dun. Not you stalking them.
Los Angeles.
Ooh.
Okay, but anyways, question for both of you. Whenever we host friends over, people naturally congregate at the kitchen and don't utilize other common spaces like the living room to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any suggestions on how to have folks move out of the kitchen dining area into a common space to hang out? I know exactly what to do. As someone who hosts people frequently,
mm-hmm.
the most important thing is obviously you want to keep the ice in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Put all the drinks in an area where you want people to congregate, whether that's your living room or, game room, whatever.
Yeah.
Because people will, when they go to a party, they'll always go to where the drink is, because they have to make themselves like a drink or whatever, like the host makes them a drink. And they're likely to stay wherever they get the drinks at, because the mm-hmm. people will be there. So if you don't want people hanging out in your kitchen, don't keep the drinks in the kitchen, even though it seems logical thing to do.
Yeah. Because like a lot of people will keep the drinks in the fridge, which is in the kitchen, and a lot of people mm-hmm. will just go in there. Also,
like get a bucket, like, you know, pop full of ice and then put it in wherever.
And a lot of times, though, a lot of people will be where the host is, and the host is oftentimes in the kitchen because they're still doing stuff for the party. So if you want to really make sure that nobody's in the kitchen or less people are in the kitchen, then like do all the things that you have to do in the kitchen already and then get yourself around the house as much as you possibly can. And that way you can also be better at like crowd control and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And also when this is maybe just something like I've noticed, but when someone hosts a dinner party and after like your dinner, you know, move everything out of the way, but don't clean until like the guests leave.
Yes.
Cause I've been to like some dinner parties where like the guest is like, or the host is fully like loading everything in the dishwasher and cleaning everything while the guests are just like sitting in the dining room awkwardly. And I feel like, and that's also bad hosting.
Oh yeah. I didn't know that people did that.
It happens quite a lot, actually. You know, because people, they're there because they want to, like, talk with you and hang out with you. And I understand, you know, you're thinking, like, oh, my God, there's so many dishes, like, piled up. But they don't care about the dishes. They're there for you.
One thing some friends of mine have done, because I haven't had a dinner party at my house yet, but I've been to some dinner parties hosted by some friends, and they'll actually, like, hire somebody for the evening.
Oh, no, that's bougie. That's
no,
bougie.
I know. It is. It's bougie, but like...
That's out of touch.
Yeah. I don't
see... Oh, just hire people to help you.
The thing is, I'm not really sure that it was, because this was when we were like early Detroit, and we were holding like dinner parties and stuff because we literally had nowhere else to eat.
Yeah.
And like some of the... Yes, they were fancier ones, but they were also like college professors. Like that's what they did for a living. So like... And they were young college professors at the time. So, like, I don't feel like it might have been that expensive to hire, like, one person to bus from, like, a catering company. Mm-hmm. Like, if this is, like, a big party for you, getting one person to help for, like, 2 or 3 hours at, like, 15, 20 bucks an hour might be worth it. What?
Nothing, yeah. I feel like most people won't be doing that.
Probably not.
I feel like that's a little... But, you know what? If you want to do that, do it.
Like, you could get a task rabbit, right? Somebody to help you.
I feel like that's like an extra stranger in your house that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I personally would never want that. Just pile the dishes in the sink and clean them when the guests leave. That's all you have to do.
I think like one of the issues with that, like with the problem is a lot of kitchens are just open nowadays. And so like if there is a mess in the kitchen, people can now just see it from the dining
table.
But
even then, like you've all had dinner party together.
Oh, for sure.
So you've all saw the dishes being made. So people know like they don't normally live like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
but I know, like, as a host, like, some people just can't stand to have, like, people in their house to have their place messy.
And I get it, but then also I feel like that's what I'm saying. It's also just kind of, like, bad manner to let your guests sit there while you clean.
True. True. See? Hire some help.
Or just have fun with your friends and clean them when they leave. Why? What's so funny?
What's the next question?
You have like a smirk on, like
what?
That's very mischievous. What are you thinking?
I'm not thinking anything. Stop. You're making me nervous and smiling more.
Why are you nervous?
I'm not.
Okay. All right. Hi, John and Kim. I'm listening to your latest podcast, and you are currently listing some of your favorite AAPI brands.
Oh boy.
I'm curious if you have ever tried the black sesame butter from Rooted Fair. It's nut butter with that rich flavor and color of roasted black sesame with just a slight bit of sweetness and some added crunch for texture.
Mm.
Wow, you really sold me on this.
I know, me too. She sounds like you describing food.
I don't know if I've had sesame butter. Have you?
No, I haven't.
I feel like there's so much like nut butter like out. And I get overwhelmed.
Yeah. I would
and
try
then
it.
I just
what is it called?
Rooted sesame black sesame butter from Rooted Fair.
I don't see it.
Although sesame is like one of those things, like, I love the flavor, but it can be very, like, intensely rich. Like, same with, like, tahini, you know?
This is called, it's called crunchy black sesame butter. Savory, sweet, smoky, nutty.
Mm, that could be good, though.
Yeah, I would try it.
Oh, well, why would you, like, eat it with?
And they even describe it, first sentence, not too sweet. We probably will love it.
That might be good, and if you make like mochi and stuff, it's like a filling in the inside.
Have you ever had tong yun? Have you ever had tong yun, the Chinese mochi?
Yes.
I think it's the inside of that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That might be good if you make like latte and stuff with too.
Yeah. Ooh, yes.
All right. This is from Christina. Mm-hmm. Hi, Kim and John. Love your podcast. I was wondering what your ideal breakfast sandwich is to make at home. What do you like on it, and what kind of bread? Thank you.
There's so many.
I guess let me just, the sandwich that I end up making the most, mm-hmm. like that I end up craving the most, and yeah. Egg salad sandwich on an untoasted soft white bread.
Nice.
Tuna salad sandwich with like a whole lot of, iceberg lettuce.
Tuna salad is one of those like very rare things when I'm like happy to run into celery.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? Like,
so I used to hate celery.
Yeah. And I'm still on the fence about celery.
Yeah. But in a tuna salad,
it's so good.
It's like the fishiness, like the mass.
Yeah.
Like the flavor of celery, but adds that nice crunch.
Yeah. And then it like, there's something about the celery aroma with the tuna salad. Like it works. Mm-hmm. I don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
However, there's another tuna salad sandwich here in LA at a place called Joan on 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Their tuna salad sandwich does not contain celery, but instead has shredded carrots. Sounds weird, but it works.
Okay.
It has a nice, wonderful crunch.
Sweetness to it, I'm just guessing.
It's not too much sweetness because it's like raw carrot.
Hmm.
But
I would try it.
It's good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like tuna salad when in doubt. Like.
Oh, she's talking about breakfast sandwich though. Is that, does that
did
change
you say breakfast
the
sandwich?
I think breakfast.
Oh my God. I totally look over the breakfast part.
Well, you know, as like Asian people, like, you know, we generally eat whatever we want for breakfast.
It doesn't necessarily.
So yeah.
Maybe the only thing we don't like eat for breakfast is like heavy sweet.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Which is like the stereotypical American breakfast.
Yeah. So my ideal breakfast sandwich, I know exactly what it is. I actually ate it for breakfast this morning. I like to, cook eggs, whether if it's scrambled or fried.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like to, and while it's cooking, like on the heat, like on the stovetop in the pan, I like to throw in feta cheese.
Mm.
Something about feta cheese, like normally, like when it's cold, it's sharp and salty.
Mm.
But then when it gets hot, the flavor really like mellows out. And there's like still saltiness, but like the saltiness, like, I can't describe it, but like something about like the chemical formula just changes and becomes like a complete different ingredient.
Oh, okay.
Feta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
Like when feta is like melty?
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So then I like it on sourdough with a ton of spinach, like fresh spinach. And then I add like the scrambled egg or fried egg with the feta in there. And a little drizzle of chili oil.
Nice. For me, now I love all sorts of sandwiches, but I only like ever eat one kind of sandwich for breakfast of any kind. And I do it very rarely, but it's definitely a bacon, egg, and cheese on a poppy seed bagel toasted with a cup of black coffee.
Mm, yeah.
And that's all I really crave for when I want to like a breakfast sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
The other option was like something that we used to eat as a kid would be like a white bread, soft, untoasted white bread, pork floss, and mayonnaise.
Oh, You know, pork floss is not one ingredient that I like grew up eating it. I wish I like knew how to like eat it better because I never really know how to utilize it.
It's so good in a sandwich. It's so good with bread. Like it's so good as to accompany bread because it's like soft and soft, but like umami soft. Like it's so good. And like it's good with mayonnaise. And then obviously like congee.
Okay. All right. So the next question is from Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I said it like that. Jennifer. Love the pod. My question for the table is about salt.
Ooh.
As a white American who cooks a lot of Asian dishes, I find myself reaching for the salt, especially as a finishing touch on all my dishes.
Mm-hmm.
For Asian dishes, should I be reaching for MSG instead? Mm. Is salting an Asian dish considered a no-no? Mm. I realize this could be cuisine-specific, so if my question is too broad, are there specific cuisines that are more salt-forward? So, I guess I'll start. I'll give my Korean-like perspective.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, like, Korean food where it tends to be, like, a lot of, like, soups and stews. It's funny because I had my Korean friend over for dinner the other day. And when she was, like, looking at my table and she was like, oh, you have, like, a American table set up. I'm like, what does that mean? She's like, you have a salt and pepper shaker. And I'm like, everyone has a salt and pepper shaker. She's like, our family's never had a salt and pepper shaker. And I thought about it and I was like, yeah, growing up. When I lived with my mom and also my grandparents, like they never have salt and pepper shaker on the table because all the food comes seasoned.
Mm-hmm.
And if the food is not seasoned, like salungtang or chonur things, then you add salt like table side or you like dip it in soy sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Or things are served at like salty pickled dishes that is meant to like be the salty part. So like not everything is salty. So like some things might be like completely no salt or like undersalted because it's meant to be eaten with things that are salty.
Yeah.
Even like when you go to Korean barbecue, like most Korean barbecue in Korea, like they don't serve salt with it because you eat like samjang or like kimchi, like with the meat.
That which is quite salty.
Salty, yeah. Which acts as salt.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's the thing with America, like you salt like every step of the way, you know?
Yeah, but
you
also
salt your pasta water, you salt your pasta, you salt the ingredients.
But like also like in America is like what they're eating is usually like it. Like they don't have, there's not a huge condiment thing. There's not a huge like additional side dish type thing. It's like what's on your plate is what is there. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of like opportunity to add extra, I guess. I guess when we're talking about like America, your stereotypical American dinner fare, there's not a lot of opportunities to add a lot of extra flavor in there. So like it has to be there with like salt and pepper that's on the table. Mm-hmm. Chinese
it's composed dish as opposed to like
exactly
one that you have to build together.
Yeah. So yeah, same with Hong Kong. Like we didn't really have salt and pepper on the table. We had soy sauce and Maggi sauce and chili paste. Like those, we didn't have like salt and pepper shakers. We had literally like a small little tray that stays on the table that is soy sauce. Usually it's like one kind, one like a dark soy sauce, vinegar, Maggi sauce, and chili paste. So we can be like spicy, savory, like different layers of stuff. And that's what we would add. And a lot of our condiments are like dish specific, so we would just add it on as we wanted. But we also brought these things out, these jars of different pickles and condiments based on what we were cooking. So there's not a lot of salt added, but if we were going to add salt, you can add it while you're cooking, but a lot of times what we would add instead would be like a soy sauce. Even the Chinese cooking wine has a little bit of salt in it and like maybe chicken bouillon powder, that kind of thing to give it a little bit more richness. MSG is not something I put on, like to answer the question. MSG is not really something I like to put on last.
Yeah, it has to be like cooked into the broth.
Yeah,
things.
Because like it's such a strong flavor that like if you add it in last, it will be the only thing that you'd, yeah, it would overpower for sure.
Mm-hmm. Like a little touch of it, like while you're cooking, like yeah, does go a long way, you know?
Yeah. So a lot of people will just be like, oh, put a couple of shakes of MSG, that's it. Yeah. No, like you can supplement MSG mm-hmm. with a little bit of salt. But if you're talking about a last touch finisher, if something is not salty mm-hmm. enough for you, you can reach for like a high quality soy sauce, like a final flourish soy sauce in Chinese food.
I think the exception to this like MSG like table side would be Vietnamese cuisine.
Oh, do they do that? Do they add it?
At least from like a lot of my friends, Vietnamese friends, like they tell me like, oh, we always like have MSG table side because like when they eat like a lot of like noodle soups, then they'll like sprinkle.
Oh, MSG, but that's what soup broth. You can easily mix yeah. that in and it dissolves. Yeah.
But you wouldn't be sprinkle like MSG over like a dry dish.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And also to answer your question, if you want to add salt to the finishing touch and if you think it tastes good, do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And when you're cooking, I guess if you're following the recipe and they don't use salt, make it as, you know, make it without the salt. And if you feel like you need salt, just add it. You know? You're going to be the one eating it. So if you don't do something, ain't no one going to stop you from adding salt to your dishes.
Right.
So, another
question.
We have
time for one more.
One more? Yeah. We have so many questions.
Oh, no, we can save them for next time.
Oh, fuck you. All right, this one is from Ian. I've just finished making chicken broth and bone broth following John's tutorial.
Oh.
And am very pleased by how they came out. I just used some of the bone broth to make a pot of nongshim shin noodle soup, and it was delicious. And in my head, extra nutritious. Would you make the same broth with other birds? Duck? Turkey? How about goose at Christmas? How about other meats? What would you change for beef, pork, or lamb?
Oh, good question. Yes, turkey is one of the best ones that you can do. Mm-hmm. Everybody like fights over the turkey carcass at the end of like a Thanksgiving or Christmas Day meal. You can do it with anything essentially that has bones, even fish. Mm-hmm. Fish bone soup is absolutely delicious. And the best thing about using fish bones is that you only need to do it for 45 minutes as opposed to a lot longer with the other animals. And it's full of collagen. So good for your skin. But otherwise, there's really like, if you like eating the animal and you've got the bones of it, there's no reason why you shouldn't or can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say, a lot of it just comes down to like cooking time and method, right? Mm-hmm. There's some bones that you feel like, I feel like chicken bone broth, if you like cook it for too long, the flavor gets a little too funky.
Yeah, it can get a little muted. And it would be faster like that if you were using like goose or duck, because mm-hmm. they're also kind of gamey. But yeah, it's important not to do it for too long.
But if you want to try like a really fun new bone broth that you've never tried before, might I recommend human? I don't know what it tastes like.
But let us know.
I'm kidding. All right, that's our show for today. That's our podcast for today. if you have questions, please submit them to One for the Table on our Instagram. That is number one, and then for the table. We also have an email that I forgot about, but John will check it regularly now that we remember it. And that is also number one for the table at gmail.com. All right. Thank you, everyone. See you next week.
Bye.